Welcome back to We Got Goosebumps, a podcast dedicated to the landmark horror series for children. Written by Arl Stein back in the 90s. I'm your dad, and I want to speak to a manager, Dylan.
Oh, Dad, you look upset. I'm your scientist uncle, who looks exactly like how you would expect a scientist to look. I'm Travis. Hey.
I just realized we're both family members of the listener in a very uncomfortable way. It's just like, we've now inserted yourself. Like, I'm now your dad, and Travis is your scientist uncle, and that's just how it is now.
That's how it is, you know? And if you at home could guess which two books those beloved family members were from, you get extra credit on the test, which is at the end of the episode. So good job.
Oh, is there a test?
No. But if there were, it'd be a fun test, I think.
I don't think there's really much of a fun... Well, there actually is. I can't talk about it on the show. Anyway, on today's bonus episode, because we're outside of season two. Season two is dead and gone and buried and will never be heard again. We're going to be ranking the 10 books that we covered in season two. Covered. You know what that reminds me of?
Tim Jacobus.
Yeah.
Yes. Book covers. And he's here to join us. Tim, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, everybody. Oh, no. Is that his voice?
I wish. I doubt it.
We'll be
ranking the 10 books, including the covers that we covered in season two. Can't wait. Of course, we did this in season one. A lot of fun. I have no memory of what those rankings were, but that's the fun of this. Nobody cares.
No. We're going to be up this time. We're going to be up.
Oh, that's the fun of this. Some people care. So.
That is up for us.
After that, we're going to step away. In the middle of the episode, you won't know. Folks won't know. Folks at home will be like, it felt like just an instant. But to us, it will be 45 minutes because we're going to watch the first episode of the show, which was of The Haunted Mask. See, it was a two-parter. One and two. Very first episode. We're going to step away. We're going to watch it. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about how it differed from the book, what we thought, what happened, if it's cool or not.
In hindsight.
That's how we'll wrap it up.
In hindsight, maybe we shouldn't have picked an episode based on a book that we read at the very beginning of the season and don't remember at all. At least I don't.
I think that makes it more fun.
That's true. We'll just be like, Carly Beth, that wasn't her name, was it? Stupid show. And then we'll be like, no, that actually was 100% her name, Dylan. It's like,
Yeah, this is the opportunity for people at home to yell at us. So, with that, Dylan, you know, it was season two, we did just wrap it up. It's been done, as you mentioned, buried in the ground. I already kind of miss it. Can't wait for season three. It's going to come out hot. We're eating worms right out of the gate. But I don't know, man. In hindsight, this season, compared to the first season, did you have any different vibes at the end? Were you like, man, what did we get ourselves into with this podcast? These books are getting worse and worse. We're about the same.
I've been thinking that since day one when I sat down here and you were like, Dylan, I want to do a podcast with you. It's going to be about Goosebumps. It's like, did you even read those as a kid? And you're like, no. And it's just like, all right, so we're just jumping right in. So from that moment, I've been feeling a sense of impending dread.
Fair.
When I was going through it, I feel like the highs were higher, but the lows were lower.
Mm.
And yeah, like the ones that are like high up for me are like, I feel like might be my favorites forever out of
the, really, wow.
Like knocking maybe one or two down from the first season. I'm assuming at some point we might have to do like a giant overall ranking, at least of the top 10 books, maybe like or at some point, but because I don't want to rank all 67 necessarily. 67?
Yeah.
In the
or
60s.
62
yeah.
if you want to do that. Yeah, I was curious, like, at what point, maybe at the halfway mark, we do like our top 10 to date, concluding every season or something, you know, just to kind of see. But in my mind, from season one, there were a couple of books that stood out. Say Cheese and Die, or Die.
Sorry, that's my fault, because you had it right for the longest time. It's just like, Say Cheese or Die, and you're just like, Dylan, no, that's not the name of the book. And it's just like,
Say Cheese,
and then the Invisible Ghost maybe Friend. Die. Like, I love the Invisible Ghost Friend. That was another of my favorites.
I know. I shouldn't hang out with you. I will say, first Monster Blood and Say Cheese and or Die are, those are like, I don't know, Led Zeppelin and the Beatles, or some analogy where it's like, those are just classics from the start of the series that are just, they kind of have like, they're almost untouchable to me. They're just so good. They set a very high bar. And then here we have like one book for me in season two that punches up against that. And the rest of them are either average or just like, whoa, who's it? Who wrote it? Who did that? Was
and
it
why?
URL?
And why did you do it? Yeah. There's the way I did the bottom five for mine is I was just like, all right, what moment made me happy in this one? I'd be like, this particular one did not have even a moment. Like it came down to that where it's just like, I had to be like, because like the overarching plots for, I want to say my bottom four are pretty like loosey goosey. And like, there's not a lot there to talk about that makes me happy in terms of like the characters or the plot or whatever. And it was just like, This moment was hilarious and I loved it. And like, might involve basketball. Like, so that might have saved it from being in the very, very bottom. But like, other times it's just like, oh boy. But there's, I want to say my top five, my top three, I feel like are all classics also. So,
okay. All right.
But I mean, we can get into it. We can talk about it in more in depth instead of vague. What? I don't understand why we're staying in this period where we don't want to spoil it and we're just like,
yeah, I know. I wanted to get some vibes out of the gate. Now I've got vibes. We can jump right in.
I feel like our bottom one is going to be the same.
Should we try to say it at the same time?
It'll be hilarious if we're just both just like, one day at horror.
No, never.
That bottom one.
You read yours upside down.
No. All right. Are you ready to do your bottom? Because I've got my bottom out already. So.
Okay. Sure. My number 10 is Why I'm Afraid of Bees.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah.
What's hilarious is that's the one I've been talking about since we start, like on every other episode, like in season one, it's just like, man, I can't wait till we get to that bee one.
I know.
It's just, I kept bringing it up because I think it was like one of the first ones you sent me. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, holy shit, goosebumps. And it just had it lying around all the time, just staring at me like, his head's on a bee body. This is going to be great.
It does have like, it didn't make my cut of top three covers for this. I struggle with like how memorable and iconic that cover is and how much I still just don't like it.
Yeah.
And the book. But when I think of Goosebumps books, that's one of the covers that pops in my head. And I have to be like, that does not make it good. That just means that it's weird.
I don't know what it is. It's almost like the UK version of a Tim Jacobus cover where it's just kind of like, there's a kid in a bee's. I don't know though. I don't know what it is about the cover. I do know what it is about the in between the covers.
Yeah.
There's so much. I mean, by the time we're done, I feel like the book was dripping with spackle.
Yeah, a lot of spackle. I mean, we were so furious about it was the lady and her book. Yeah. She was running an operation that was just preying on children. There was no, how was she making money and why was she not getting parental consent?
Yeah. And just the fact that she seemed to be doing all of the work, like running from house to house, being like, I've got to do this brain transfer. I'll be right back. Oh, by the way, don't let any bugs or anything into the room. That's why I have a giant screen divider in the office to make sure that nothing gets into the secret sensitive material. And then meanwhile, she goes into his house and she's like, yeah, I don't care. There's like bees crawling into the machine. She's just like swatting them off of things. And the fact that it's one of those books. It's very similar to another book where the ending is such a cop-out where it's just like, oh, so if he had stung anybody at any time in this book, he would have just come back. Like, it's kind of like when the Good Witch of the West, the East, the Good Witch or whatever, is like, all you had to do is clack those heels together and then you could go on home at any time. And that's how Glinda the Good Witch talks. And it's just like, maybe you should have fucking told her that. Like, this fucking journey you sent her on to? Like, maybe tell her to clack her heels together, and then she doesn't have to fucking do all this bullshit.
That's right. Anyway. I'm glad you brought the city character of you out for that.
It just really pisses me off. Why I'm Afraid of Bees is so much.
It didn't pick the right way to make us afraid, because there's a lot of people afraid of bees. You could have had a lot of moments where the kid is covered in bees or near bees or threatened by bees, but you made him a bee, which is like, oh, well, so he's probably okay.
I feel like the worms one is going to be like that, because it's talking about like worms just appearing in his food and stuff and his backpack or like where he doesn't expect to see worms. So it feels like he's getting the swarm situation.
Right.
Whereas And let's, I mean, this is the most pedantic thing to point out. The title of the book is Why I'm Afraid of Bees. And we never actually, the book doesn't answer that question.
No, not even a little bit.
I mean, we know he's chicken shit about pretty much everything, which I guess is like, yeah, he's got like a general anxiety disorder kind of thing. So that's why he's afraid of bees, as well as air currents, shadows, his sister, his sister's cat, Klaus.
His neighbor, who is apparently a race car driver.
And kind of an asshole, to be fair. Like, yeah,
he is. Why,
you don't need to prank other people's children. That seems weird to me. I feel like that's just a couple steps away from being like, oh, Gary, you want to come into my basement for motion pictures? And just like, no, Gary. I'm sorry. I shouldn't do jokes like that.
I think my favorite part of Mr. Andretti was when he yelled at, was it Gary? I can't remember the kid's name. But
yeah, Gary Lutz.
Gary Lutz.
Gary. No, it's Gare Bear.
Yeah, he fusses at him for staring at him. Like, as if, like, the kid's the pervert. I just love it. I think that's hilarious. Flipping the script.
Oh, yeah. Like, are the FBI agents hiring junior agents now or something like that for the neighborhood watch?
That's right.
Yeah. But there just wasn't... There wasn't a lot there for me to really get...
No.
There was a lot to be like, what the... How does this fucking science work? Like, at all.
Yeah.
Why is this woman just transferring children to other children and her book filled with Polaroids of children? Like the kind of thing that you'd see on an episode of Forensic Files is some of the evidence they got out of someone's shed being like, oh, we found this big book of Polaroids of children. And she's like, oh, no, she's also transferring bodies. And it's like, OK, wait, what?
Yeah, we need to lock her up.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of being locked up, my number nine.
Uh-huh.
Monster Blood 2.
Oh, shit. We're locked in 2 for 2.
Really?
That's mine.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, I was locked up like the hamster. It was a hamster, right? You have me so nervous about confusing hamsters and gerbils. I haven't slept well since we recorded that. But
no, it's definitely a hamster.
Okay, yeah. Great. You got Andy in there and Evan. The banter there is great, but that's it. That's the strong point. The rest of it is
and
like...
the weird situation with Conan.
He's a normal dude.
But he should be a normal dude, except that he's like 30 and in high school and beating 30. Up children, but his home life is perfect.
Great home life.
Maybe it's not perfect for him.
I don't know. Maybe it's not the home life. Maybe it's something going on at school or church. You know, we don't know. We haven't let Conan
speak. That's true. There's a lot of situations that could cause. I mean, that teacher's pretty dog shit. Let's be honest. Like, you told me he was, man.
The whole ending of that where I can't remember the teacher's name, but there's like this whole action sequence where they walk in and the hamster's like 10 foot tall and they're fighting it with chairs. Like, what was that book? Which is, you know, and at the end of the day, I think this one takes a hit because the first Monster Blood was so beloved and it was so fun and weird. It also had like this unsettling weirdness of like, what could happen next with this stuff? You know, you got beefy Aunt Catherine, you got the cat. We've talked about that over and over again, how that book had so much to it.
There's
and
a cat.
This
witch.
One had nothing really to riff on.
No. And the ending, the fucking ending where it goes like, oh, expiration date. And it's like, oh, so we didn't have to do anything again. Like if the character had just not done anything.
Big disappointment there. Solved. We've got two more Monster Bloods coming our way. Maybe he gets it right again.
I love how crazy Andy is in that book, though, where she's just like, let's just fucking feed it to Conan. And like, he's just, no, what is wrong with you? And then she's like, well, if we feed just a little bit to the hamster? It's like, how much is a little bit? Oh, you know, about a fist size. Like, just, I just let him eat till he got to the bottom of the can, Evan. He's like, holy shit, he's about the size of a skyscraper now. I'm going back to my aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, that was wild.
You're right. Andy and Evan are the best parts of those books, which is funny because I feel like at least some of the Goosebumps fans who follow us on Twitter seem to despise Evan, which is
interesting.
Like, they genuinely don't like Evan. And I don't know. Maybe he turns out to be like a neo-Nazi in the third book or something. And you're like,
he gets what's coming to him. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number 8.
This is where things, I think, are going to start changing up.
I hope. We got to have some diversity here. Be careful what you wish for is my number 8.
I wonder if we flip-flopped, because that one's coming up soon, but I put Piano Lessons Can Be Murder here.
Okay, I could, well, Fair. So we might have flipped. So, be careful what you wish for. You had some good criticisms of this one on the episode where you didn't like the curse, just kind of the way the curse was. I want to say worded because that makes you seem pedantic, but there is a fair criticism in the way that this is delivered.
It's the missing person one that's like a bullshit moment where like she's like, I want her to disappear. It's like she made everybody disappear. It's like that what? That's a real fucking real weird reading of that particular wish. So I didn't like that.
Yeah, and there were a couple parts in there that were befuddling to me. I remember making fun of it in the episode when whoever the main character is, she goes back to find the witch, and she goes mm-hmm. to where she first saw her and not where she took her.
Left her off, yeah.
And I was like, why would you do that? That was dumb.
I think her name's Samantha Bird.
Yeah, but, there you go. And there were some really funny parts in that book, too. That was a little bit more basketball fun.
That's kind of, so originally, Be Careful What You Wish For was a little lower, but the basketball game still cracks me up thinking yeah. about her like running up and down the court being like, come on guys, he's like, you're such an asshole, like while everyone's like dying of like some strange version of mono that's just cut down the entire basketball team except for her, and she's just like, yeah, let's go, and they lose by like 70-3 yes. and she didn't even make those 3 points, like it's like I did enjoy that moment enough to bump it a little higher than
yeah and her teammates spot. I think it was like Judith or something and another girl
was just immediately like, she's a witch.
Yeah, they were terrible kids. I love that they got what was coming to them. But
they
yeah.
didn't, because Sam is the one who gets, she gets turned into a bird at the end of the right. fucking
right.
book.
That's
so
right.
So it even feels like, I always forget about that, and now I kind of want to bump it down again.
I think that's what did it to me. The ending was a little less than satisfying, but I still like it when there's a little twist at the end. Like that, even if it's not in my favor, I like the last
that's
punch.
True.
But yeah, that's where it lands for me is number 8. So your number 8's Piano Lessons Can Be Murder.
Yeah, so for me, it just was, I didn't have a moment in Piano Lessons Can Be Murder that's in Be Careful What You Wish For. Like it's, I think I talked about it on the episode. There's so many moments where, because the main character is so just like, whatever, you know, I don't care. Like, he just seems like this kid. I think he was the kid that was always just like, yeah, yeah, I'm from New York and now I'm out here in what, fucking Cleveland or whatever this shit is. Like, you know, back in New York City, we could do whatever the fuck we wanted. Like, I think he was the kid who kept talking about like, yeah, I'm from Queens. He's just like Henry, basically.
Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah, Henry Zebrowski. And so his whole attitude through it was just like, oh, gee willikers, that ghost lady certainly seemed pretty upset at you know who, that being me. Like, he never seemed like scared.
Never seemed scared, or disturbed. Yeah.
Yeah. So he just kind of like, it didn't make it. And plus, I don't, how are they hovering, man? Those hands.
Right. I think the only reason I kicked this one up was because there was some real consternation for me between Be Careful What You Wish For and Piano Lessons Can Be Murder. Cause I really do love that basketball scene. I think that really is special, but there was something about going through that school and there being like a hostage in a locker. And there was some like really dark stuff in there that I thought could have been explored or was maybe better off left unexplored. Because if Arlstein has to explain it, then it becomes a kid's explanation. But we get like this idea of like this school where there are, I don't know. There's a lot of dark things going on in there. And while the magic behind it was a little silly, where there's like sort of a magic robot thing going on, there was still something yeah. sinister enough where I was like, you know, I'll bump it up, you know, cause he's always like, oh, I love your hands, Jerry. You got nice hands, Jerry. It's kind of neat.
Dr. Chalk. Was that the name of the piano teacher?
Dr. Something. Dr. Shriek? Squeak? Speak?
Shriek. Shriek. Dr. Shriek, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So is number 7, Be Careful What You Wish For? Did we flip-flop on those?
Yeah.
Cool.
That was my number 7, was Be Careful What You Wish For.
All right. My number 6, The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight.
Okay.
We locked in?
It's getting weird. It's getting weird now.
We locked in.
We'll get to the middle. It's going to be the same, like, up and down. Well, no, because our number 1 is definitely the same.
Probably. I think we might, our 5 through 2 may switch it up a little bit. But yeah, Scarecrow Walks at Midnight. I thought, I just had higher hopes for it. I wanted the, you know, a nice farm scarecrow vibe. Could have been really creepy, but instead it ended up being some ignorant hillbilly with a book that no one would take from him.
So this is the one I was telling you, and I'm assuming that you guessed it was this one. This is one I was telling you before we started recording that, when I was reading it, I was like, pretty good. I enjoyed it. And then when we were talking about it, I got real mad at it. I think I even said on the episode, talking about this has made me hate it more. And then listening to the episode made me love it again. So right. it was a real roller coaster. Like what we did, with like the character of, not Sticks. What's the old man's name?
Shit. What is
Stanley?
Stanley. Yeah. Yeah.
Stanley. What we did with Stanley made me kind of like, what is his story? Like, what is the backstory of Stanley?
We never find out what happens to Stick's mom, Stanley's, I guess, former mm-mm. wife. That's kind of a mystery. Why is he on the farm? Why do they keep letting him on the farm? There's a lot there that, again, left unexplained is kind of add some intrigue that otherwise wouldn't be there.
But there are also some like good moments between like, when they're at the swimming hole together and Jody, I think she falls into the water accidentally when they're fishing, and Stanley and her brother are both just like, oh shit, is she okay? Whatever at first. And then Stanley says something like, I'm sorry, Jody, if I'd known you were going to go swimming, I brought swimming trunks. And she just like, shut the fuck. And it's just like such a perfectly written moment of just like, then they crack up and she's just like, I swear to God, I'm going to beat you both to death, and like walking off. And, or the moment when Sticks like just jams that corn cob covered with worms down her brother's back.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's hilarious too. Like it's these like moments that actually feel like from actual families. And then the really depressing message of your grandparents are getting older and dying.
Yeah.
It makes it weirdly poignant in some parts that it wouldn't have been otherwise. Like it's, I feel like it belongs.
Yeah,
in number six.
I agree. And I have to bring up my favorite part of that book, which helps make it number six, is we've left Mark out in the field as a scarecrow for over an hour. And I can't help but think about like all the straw touching his, skin, and it's very irritated. There's bugs. He's itchy, but he's trying to do what his sister's asked. And meanwhile, Stanley has been told that, like, hey, calm down. The scarecrows, there's no scarecrows moving around. Stanley,
he's
calm
on
down.
Like, he's on like just got back from the war levels of PTSD about scarecrows,
yeah.
Like when they're calming him down. And like,
and then after we've got him calmed down, we're like, there's no, we're good. Ouch. From the east, hoddles over young Mark in a full scarecrow getup and just flips Stanley out, dude. I love
it. It is. Oh, my God. It is.
Books don't very often have, like, great timing in those ways that, like, a mm-hmm. movie can, but this was just well done. Well done.
I think because at that point I had, you kind of as a reader have forgotten about Mark to some degree, like, because you're so busy with the fact, like, oh, shit. Like, you've just found out at that point that they're real and that they're actually coming alive and everything. And so, like, Mark pretending to be a scarecrow out in the woods or out in the cornfields is just, like, dropped completely out of my head. And then he comes waddling up. It is a good moment.
It's a great moment.
It's a really good moment.
All right, let's see if we're different on number five. My number five is You Can't Scare Me.
Oh. My number five is The Werewolf of Fever Swamp.
Okay, so we're going to get pretty different right here. All right.
Yeah, I kind of expected it to get funky up in here.
Right. Yeah. Well, indeed.
Up in here.
Yeah. You Can't Scare Me. I did.
My butthole.
I did think it was fun. I thought the buildup was just kind of boring, but you get a bit of action there at the end that's kind of fun when you finally get to see all the mud men show up, and then you're like, oh, it's Kevin, I think is the brother's name. He's come to help us out and do this like sting scare operation on these two girls that we fucking despise for no reason. They're fine people. but then actual mudmen show up and I'm like, oh, there's the payoff finally. But I think it's just too slow of a burn. It had a lot of promise. It just didn't deliver until very late.
I think it was during this episode that made me, like while we were talking about it, that made me appreciate it so much more, where it turned into like, oh, we're following the bullies in this one. And the bullies are like just these awful little shits as they're trying to like terrify this girl in their class. And they're so bad at it.
Yeah.
Like the tarantula incident, like yes. they describe where they're nearly caught. And like, Once you accept the conceit that, like, spooky things aren't happening at the until, like, the last page, literally, I love the fact that it's so different from the other Goosebumps books. And, like, you're not supposed to root for the main characters because they're just lazy little shits. And, like, one of them, you know, she's talking and she's they're like, oh, we're so smart, we'll figure things out. Meanwhile, she's got gum all stuck in her braces again. Like, and she's just, like, trying to free herself. The thing with the St. Bernard dog where they're just like, let's put shaving cream all over his face. And she still shows them up. And she's just like, I not only have tamed your dog, but also this fucking actual deadly monster that nearly killed the other children. I kind of ended up loving that book.
It was one where I enjoyed our discussion much more than the book itself. I think we had a lot of fun in that episode. But your number five is Werewolf of Fever Swamp.
So this is one for me that feels very solid all the way through, but there's nothing in it that makes me, like, stand up and, like, take notice necessarily. Like, it's very well done, and it's sturdy, but there's no moment in it where I'm just like, the fuck? Or just, like, the ones I have above this all have moments that are just like, holy shit. Like, you did that in a kid's book. And even Werewolf Fever Swamp, it ends with him being, you know, I'm a werewolf. I promised not to shout that 60 to 70 times tonight. The proto Stanley, that Swamp Hermit, like, that was his name, was like Swamp Hermit. Like, it was solid all the way through. I don't have a problem necessarily, but the ones I put above it are ones that have reasons for being above it. For me. Plus, I like werewolves, but, you know, like, I feel like there weren't enough werewolves in it necessarily.
That's, yeah, when you pointed that out in the episode, I was like, that does kind of give it a few, like, not, you know, it's a little disappointing in that regard, in that it's more just the threat of, there's just a lot of disturbances in the night for a long time. Mm-hmm. Not a lot going on, but.
I did like the sibling relationship in that one a lot, too. That felt like a natural.
Yeah. Yeah, they picked each other a little bit, but they were, like, also on the same side in some way, so it wasn't, like, a complete, some of the relationships that we get into in these books just irritate me. I know they're supposed to, because kids are irritating, but that was one that was kind of pleasant, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Even though they didn't always agree, they did have their moments of, like, working together and also hating each other. Like, she was down with not getting rid of the dog until the dog killed, like, or supposedly the dog killed, like, a rabbit or something, and then the sister's just like, get the fucking dog out of here. She's like, no, Christy,
her name was. Yeah, I think so. You're doing a great job.
I don't know why. I don't know why it's during this special bonus episode that only three people listening to that I actually remember the titles of everything and, like, names of characters. And
on your A game. Yeah. Well, I'll save...
What's your number four?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll save my thoughts for that one when it comes up, because my number four is going to be Deep Trouble. Same? Yeah, well, I guess we must have flip-flopped on that one, because I have a feeling our top two are going to be the same. So, Deep Trouble.
No, it's already not going to be, because my top two, we've already talked
about. Okay, all right. Okay, all right, cool. So, Deep Trouble. I thought that one was just interesting. I have a, I don't know what the phobia is exactly. Thalassophobia, a little bit, maybe. Just, you know, what lies beneath the surface of a dark water, a big watery abyss. And this plays on that a little bit, you know. Our character's going out for some swims. He's getting his foot rubbed against. She thinks it's a seaweed. What's going on with that? He thinks it's hands. Is it a monster? Sometimes it's a mermaid. That was a weird thing to kind of scare us with, because mermaids I don't really associate with being, like, associated with scary. But he flips it. We got to protect the mermaid. Oh, neat. But obviously, as in these books, oftentimes the scariest part is just another human being. And it happens to be the guy on the boat who's trying to kidnap the mermaid and has just complete disregard for the children. And I was like, whoa, that was wild.
Yeah. He's just like, yeah, murder these children and this old man that, or not old man, I guess. He's like your age, so like older man.
Wait, our age, we're the same age.
Mature man.
Yeah. I just, you know, it was kind of a fun heist book. I had fun reading it. It wasn't scary in the sense that I try to get from all these Goosebumps books, but it was, I would want to say it's a page turner. I thought it was a pretty good book.
And there was a lot of moments that, like, were hilariously realistic. Like, every time, Billy was just like, I'm going to stop these guys. And he charges up to them and he's like, ugh! And then the thug would be like,
I'm going to put you back over here just by lifting you up and putting you back down.
Yeah, it puts him in the child. Tank.
Yeah,
it's although, just like... That is a part that is kind of crazy that they shove them in the tank and push it into water. Like, they do try to kill children in that book. Indisputably.
Yeah. It is, it's just like the Mummy's Tomb, where if the rest of the Mummy's Tomb had been interesting, the fact that they were, like, kidnapped by a person to be murdered was just like, holy shit, the scariest part of it. Just like in, Say Cheese or Die, that feels like a little too close. I said and. Didn't
you
I?
Said or, say, but yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
Motherfucker.
We've ruined it.
Is so, just unsettlingly real, where like the girl just disappears and they're just like, oh, she's gone.
Yeah.
And just like the police have to talk to everybody. It's like, yeah, she's probably in a ditch somewhere. So
that guy, that book, that part of the book right got now. Real. That was wild.
Yeah. Although it also got weird when everyone was just like, it's the next day. And like guys are driving up next to children. He's like, are you okay? He's just like, don't, what are you doing? Are you trying to get arrested by the police? Like, what's happening?
And he's letting
like,
their children just walk around now by themselves.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's literally the girl next door got snatched, yeah. As far as they know.
Stay inside. But Deep Trouble, I like the twist at the end. I thought that we got, I wish we had a little more of that, but we got our sea monster at the end, which, you know, not sparse on details. Yet it left a lot up to your imagination, but nice little payoff at the end there.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. What's your number three?
My number three is The Werewolf at Fever Swamp.
Okay, well, that's bullshit.
Well, I did. I enjoyed, I like a book that has multiple threats, right? So you've got, there's a werewolf out there, there's the hermit out there, there's, what was his name? Matt or whatever. The guy that, the kid that ends up actually being the werewolf who's just this like,
Zach Marthew.
He's just next door. I imagined him, Will. It is Will. I imagined for some reason, this is not fair to Will. But I imagined him as the kid from Beavis and Butthead that wears the Winger t-shirt that they always pick on. I imagined it was him, but just with a gruffer voice, just coming over and trying to bug our main characters into hanging out. But he ends up being the werewolf, which maybe you could have guessed from the very beginning, given that they describe him as having a gravelly voice. He's got like excessive body hair for an 8-year-old. He growls at things. He only eats raw meat. Like, there was a lot of weird details about the kid.
I feel like you might be exaggerating a little bit.
A little bit, but still, like, he telegraphed it pretty good. But I thought, like, it was a fun trip. You got the swamp in there is also a threat. We don't even get a lot about the swamp. There's, like, a little story about why how it got its name. Has nothing to do, really, with the book in some ways, but I don't know.
Well, maybe the fever is werewolf fever.
You got werewolf fever. There was also a thing about the dad and the deer and the Florida. It was another one of those.
Swamp scientists.
Yeah.
They're swamp deer scientists or deer scientists. Yeah.
It was just another one of those that the whole setup was weird. And it reminded me of the book at the, near the end of season one. I think Welcome to Camp Nightmare. I believe was the name of that one. Where
It
just has that like unsettling, like Twilight Zone feel the whole time. Is this Earth?
What's weird is I could totally see that being like an 80s setup or 70s movie setup or something for like a horror movie. So like, dear scientist, all right, whatever the fuck. That's a weird touch. I feel like it is a very solid, but it lacked that kind of oomph.
Yeah, I feel you. Well, what was your number three?
My number three was The Haunted Mask.
Okay, all right.
Which had that oomph. Like, Carly Beth... When she's wearing the mask and is going up to, like, adults and just like, I'm going to fucking eat your gizzards out from the inside out. And just like, you stop misbehaving there. Ooh, that's a bit much. She's like, I'm going to fucking eat your car. And she's like, okay.
Yeah. She goes hard in the paint.
Yeah, it's upsetting. Like, when she's like, gets the apples from the old people, she's just like, I fucking hate apples! And just like slams it against the door where it just like explodes, which is fun to do. Like, that doesn't take a lot of strength to explode an apple against something, but it's exciting.
I love those moments. I remember, you know, a lot of times, you know, you and I, we read the books roughly. I start reading them a little in advance. You kind of hit the audiobook maybe the day of, maybe you read it, but we will exchange like cryptic, like reaction messages. And I remember I got to a part where I was like, dude, this book goes fucking hard. And then like a day later you responded and you were like, oh, it does. And I could tell we were the same spot. That's like, yeah, she goes off on some kids hard, dude.
Yeah. She strangles her friend.
Yeah. Like, that was the part actually. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it, like when she's like strangling her friend and she's like, ha ha ha, ha, just getting into the character. And her friend's like, all right, could you go? Just because that seems like a weird character that strangles me.
Nuts, dude. Nuts. And...
and she fucking eats that worm. Oh,
straight up, yeah. And then there's the whole shopkeeper. He's interesting. We don't learn about him.
Worst shopkeeper.
But like, what's his deal? He only have to ask him three times.
He made those faces, I think, right?
Yeah.
Like he made them, and he decides that he's going to open a mask shop and then include these horrified faces as part of his inventory. I know they're in the back room, but if you have a mask shop, maybe don't sell the unloved along with your other shit. And because she's just like, I got $30. And he's just like, that's like $105 in 1994 money. Fuck yeah. Oh, but don't. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. He says no like twice. And then like if you ask him three times, he's like, all right, fine. Fine.
He put up less of a fight than the Monster Blood storekeep. And the Monster Blood storekeep had even less reason to argue about it. And he was still like, like, that makes me think the Monster Blood guy was just, like, really against selling faulty products. Like, he's just like, no, it's fucking expired. You're not going to want this. It's going to probably melt, like, everywhere. It's going to be gross. Meanwhile, the other guy's like, this will permanently affix to your face and change your personality and turn you into a literal monster. Worn down after two, like, come on, I've got cash. And he's just like, well, I don't fucking think you have a debit card, but $30 is a lot. I don't think I'll take it. Just never put it on your
$30. Oh, it's fine. Like, he could have, if he really wanted to, like okay, fine. $200. You know, maybe work the price up past what a 9-year-old can afford. But no, he's like, all right, $30 here. Put this on your face and murder the neighborhood if that's what you want to do so bad.
Go crazy. And then the ending is a good twist with her brother wearing the face.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. That was fun. All right, number two for you. What's your number two? Did you already say
my that? Number two? What's your number two?
My number two is the Haunted Mask.
Oh, we just talked about it. Oh my goodness. I mean, yeah, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. My number two is You Can't Scare Me.
Wow, that one made it all the way up there. You enjoyed that.
So when we get to the number one, which is the same for both of us, obviously, because there's only one book left to mention. I feel like they're very similar in that they're both more like child dark comedies than anything else. Where like one of them is about like the shitty bullies who like are emotionally broken by the end of the book. They're just like, we don't leave our houses anymore. And that fucking bitch, she's even more happy. You guys are awful. That you're like, you nearly got her killed and you guys are just like, I can't believe she's happy. But, yeah, I just really enjoy how fucking weird and different it is from any other Goosebumps book. Like, literally, the monsters show up 5 pages from the end. Like, it's bonkers.
Yeah. Also, there is a kind of a fun idea there where it's like we established the monsters aren't real. Kevin is actually just making a video and kind of making them real by dressing up as them. Mm-hmm. And you kind of think like, oh, okay, so they're not real. And then they end up being real, which is also a fun twist at the end as well. So it's fun. I liked it. But our number one, we come together for one day at Horrorland. Who wouldn't want to spend one day at Horrorland? I would love to. But the setup for that thing. Great. Chapter two, we got an exploded car in the parking lot.
This is the other book that we were reading that you messaged me and you're just like, holy shit, this book was like,
yeah,
when their car fucking exploded in the parking lot.
That was a cliffhanger in an early chapter that carried some weight.
Yeah, it wasn't a dream.
And the kid, everybody handled it pretty well though, astonishingly. Everyone was just like, well, shit, I guess we'll go in the park and use the phone. Like, no one's broken down and crying, like, how are we getting home? Our things are in there. It was just kind of like, well, shit, I guess we're stuck here until AAA comes. But then hijinks abound. We've got kids getting eaten by alligators. We've got slides that never end. We got mirror mazes. All kinds of crazy shit. It's just nuts.
This one is very similar to the fact that, like, it goes so dark. What is understated about it? Like, because you just see, like, parents walking by with their screaming children.
Yeah.
And it's just like, the people who don't make it outside of the park don't make it. Like, you've got the Fear Street couple who go swims with the alligators. Like, they disappear. They're dead.
Right. There's also...
And then the whole ending where it's just like, just pinch the fuckers. Like, it's so stupid. Yeah,
that is so dumb. Like, they're balloons. The ending did kind of lose some steam, but the book had done such a good job by that point. It's still going to come in number one here for me. Not even really that close. But I was trying to think. One of my favorite characters through the whole season was... and I'm losing it. I was trying to vamp so I could think of his name, but I can't think of it. But the little boy that came with the family... Who's just very mild mannered, not doesn't say a whole lot, and they're trying to like.
Oh yeah, he's not. Yeah. And like, I want to call him Lewis because he reminds me of like Lewis Tully from like the Goose
Clay
Ghostbumps.
It was
Ghostbusters Clay.
Clay, yeah. And
poor little Clay, he just didn't want to. I don't know, guys. It just seems kind of scary. I don't think we should keep doing.
Like he was the one who ended up going down the super long slide, I think. And the brother the whole time was just like, "Oh man, this fucking rocks!" Like, "Oh god, did you see the way those teenagers got torn apart by alligators?"
Ah, fun book, man. Well, that's our top 10. To recap the top 10 here, we both had Why I'm Afraid of Bees at number 10. We both had Monster Blood 2 at number 9. We separated on number 8. I had Be Careful What You Wish For. You did Piano Lessons Can Be Murder. But we flip-flopped. My number 7 was Piano Lessons Can Be Murder. Yours was Be Careful What You Wish For. Tied at number 6, Scarecrow Walks at Midnight. We did a real big flip here. Number 5 was You Can't Scare Me. Your number 5 was Werewolf at Fever Swamp. Both had Deep Trouble at number 4. My number 3, The Werewolf of Fever Swamp. Your number 3, The Haunted Mask. My number 2, The Haunted Mask. Your number 2, You Can't Scare Me. And both our number 1s, One Day at Horrorland. Bring it home. So we're pretty much in line for the most part. And it makes sense because, you know, we have talked about them now for a combined 3 hours apiece. So we should be well aware of what each other think. But what that Jacobus do, we've got to do top 3 covers real quick. My number 3 is going to be the Monster Blood 2. That damn hamster in that cage, he looks really good.
My number 3 is going to be the Haunted Mask.
Okay, you like that mask.
It's a classic to me. It's one of the ones that like says Goosebumps to me, is that cover. Like, I know like maybe it doesn't have like the same sparkle as some of the other ones, but
makes sense. Yeah.
That would be my number 3 is the Haunted Mask.
I like that. It is iconic. I can't argue with that. My number 2, one that I know you're definitely not high on, but I still like it. The Werewolf of Fever Swamp. If I was going to get a wolf shirt and wear it in middle school, I want that as my wolf shirt. It's got sweet wolf. It's not a werewolf. I agree. But it's cool wolf.
Yeah. It is a cool wolf. Mine was, my number 2 was You Can't Scare Me. Those are good mudmen.
Those are good.
Even though they're barely in the book, but like it's a good cover. A very deceptive cover, but it's a good cover.
That's right. And then my number 1, One Day at Horrorland. Still. I like it. That's in the book, that very spot. You got the big sign, One Day at Horrorland, coming up. You could see out in the distance the theme park. It's nice.
My number 1 is going to be Werewolf of Fever Swamp from Indonesia.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You were gifted an art piece based on that.
Yes, Pam, for Christmas, had to do some photoshopping and because you can't just buy this cover, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
But she managed to get rid of the words. I'll probably just post a picture on the Twitter, but managed to make a very nice canvas print of the Indonesian cover, and it is amazing.
Once you realize what she had to like scooch out of the way in terms of like the different writing that was there and things to make it get that full, just the image. Pretty incredible feat.
Can't even tell the removal and everything. Just very nice.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. Great job by Pam. Good job you for picking that one. All right. So now we gotta watch The Haunted Mask. We've got the first two episodes. There's the first two episodes of the Goosebumps TV series ever made. So we'll check that out. And don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Are we really going somewhere?
Do you like video games, movies, vinyl records, imbibing a drink or two? I'm Pam, and together with my friend Michelle, we host the Point and Drink Adventure Podcast. Join us for discussions about wine and cocktail history, the movies we've been watching, and the games we've been playing. Check out Point and Drink Adventure on YouTube for the video podcast, or look us up on the podcast app of your choice. Cheers!
All in all, though, I'm going to say that first episode of Goosebumps, really good. Thought it was pretty good. Very faithful to the book. And they fixed the two things that you and I had the most issue with in the reading. They fixed it right there.
They changed a couple of things that were big-ish. They got rid of, there's a whole scene in the book where, like, Carly Beth gets scared by tarantula. There's so many spiders, tarantulas in the Goosebumps books, now I'm noticing. At a science fair, they replaced that instead, and they put an earlier scare where it's her and her friend Sabrina going through a pumpkin patch, and they're having they get scared by Chuck and Steve, who are hiding beneath the leaves. Like, and apparently, and Sabrina says she has nothing to do with this, so God only knows how they figured out their agenda for the evening, how they knew they were going to be at this pumpkin patch. Like,
come on, Sabrina was in on it from the beginning. I always suspected her.
Oh, so you've always been one of those Sabrina conspiracy theorists who's like, Sabrina's just evil, day one, end of story. I've always stuck up for Sabrina and the career of Catherine Short.
Chuck and Steve don't seem bright enough to have pulled off such an elaborate plan, elaborate ruse. These are two knuckleheads.
So you think that you think she's the mastermind, that Sabrina has actually been orchestrating all of this awfulness in Carly Beth's life while at the same time pretending to be her best? Because there was a very touchy moment where she's just like, I would never hurt you.
Right. I think, why would you never say that unless you've been out there hurting you?
Oh, my God. And Carly Beth is I think I did that in the episode we talked about the haunted. Carly Beth, is in tears and it's just like, I'm tired of being scared. I'm tired of always being so frightened of everything. And Sabrina's just like, yes, let me drink of those tears.
Pretty much, Charlie, dude. Beth. Hey, while we're on the topic, I thought the acting in this, because you and I watched the Welcome to Dead House last time that we did one of these, and that's a few episodes later, but it feels like the acting, and of course, it's never the same actors or actresses. It's probably just they're just pulling from a pot of Canadians wanting to be on screen. But this group that they got for the first episode, I thought it was pretty solid for like made for TV, Goosebumps, low budget kind of deal. Like, I was pretty impressed that this was the first outing. I thought they did a good job.
The worst batch of children were the Chuck and Steve, I think, weren't very good, but they were barely on there. Yeah, who cares? Yeah. I thought Noah had some good turns when at the end, where she's like, oh my God, Carly Beth, take off your horrible face. JK, that's your normal face. It's so fucking hideous. Yeah. And he does like a backflip and flips her off at the same time.
Yeah, he did. Pretty bad. He did some of that. Yeah, he sold it pretty well. Also, like, too, they stay pretty faithful to the book. I feel like Welcome to Dead House really strayed quite a bit, but this did what it could.
That one goofy thing where they were like, oh, yeah, they have an artifact that protects the family from ghosts and things. It's just like, what is... I think they did still kill the dog in the show,
but
which is intense.
But this stayed so true that we had hand on the shoulder, bum, bum, bums. There were two of them.
Twice.
Yeah, two of them where that Sabrina put a hand on Carly Beth's shoulder to try to freak you out. And I was like, man, that is just faithful to the book. A lot of it was faithful to the book. But all the way down to, like, some of the lines, there's a couple moments where, like, she's walking through the house and she's carrying her head on a stick. She's got her haunted mask on. She doesn't want mom to see her taking the head out. Phone rings, distracts mom. That was right in the book.
And it's the dad from who's in Chicago. Mm-hmm. In Chicago. Yeah. For work.
Right. He's fucking somewhere. At the Holiday Inn somewhere down in Ann Arbor.
We all know, like, and they keep pretending it's just like, oh, yeah, he's in Chicago. Really, like, he's in Toronto while they're in Vancouver because, like, holy shit. It's just, it's the most Canadian fucking thing.
Very Canadian. A lot of a boot, a lot of,
definitely a lot of a boots. Like, quite a few a boots.
A lot of a boots, a lot of so many sorries. That's fine. I love it.
Very, Carly was very sorry about a lot.
Filmed in Vancouver, you know, you come to expect. It was really great. I thought all the actors and actresses were really good. There was a couple of things that I don't think were in the book, like Carly Beth just ripping up that duck costume out of anger. That was fun.
That was, those were all really good. The scenes with Carly Beth unhinged still played very well, I thought. I told you while we were watching, it's just like, this actually is like enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was like, you know, unsettling in the same way the book was unsettling, in the sense of like the child being very aggressive and, disrespectful. I might even say.
I agree.
But it's very upsetting.
They fixed the thing that you and I had issue with was, and we harped on it two earlier things. In the episode. Yeah, well, the first thing, the big one, which was the fact that this guy sold a mask at all for $30, which is like, why sell it if it's terrible? He didn't in the show. She just fucking steals it, which is a way that excuses everything. Now she has to come crawling back to him, and he's going to be like, see, I told you, you shouldn't have taken it. Because he resists hard. She throws money at him as she leaves.
Yeah, she's like, enjoy your $30. And she's just like, wow, that's aggressive already. And she's not even wearing the mask at that point. And she's acting a little rambunctious. Like, is it affecting her from a distance? Is this just like the mask is just enhancing what's already there? And we do have to worry about Carly Beth coming to school like in that famous song by Aerosmith.
Janie's got an elevator. Which one?
Elevator? Oh, no, that's an entirely different...
Ragdoll? Dude looks like a lady? Which one?
Yes, I was talking about Dude Looks Like a Lady, because at one point... Wait, no. No one's dressed like a lady.
No. But the mask effect looked really good. They did a really good job. They probably had several. But when it first goes on her, it looks just like a regular kind of mask. It's not fit to her very well. But the longer the show goes, the more she wears it, it becomes more to her face. They did a good job with that. It was little details like that.
It's getting like wet, and like the teeth start becoming like moving on their own. And you can tell like that, and like where the eyes meet, like it's you can't see the edge of the mask
where
it meets her eye anymore. Like it's just her sunken eyes.
And I think at that point, it's no longer the same actress. I think they had
There's a moment when she puts the mask on and it kind of like sinks onto her head a little bit, like a little bit of a CGI thing. And I think that's when it transitions from the younger actress into the, I'm assuming it's the person whose credit is playing the haunted mask. Cause that's literally a credit in there is the haunted mask, and it's Michael Brown, I believe.
Yeah. Hopefully that's just not his face that they modeled it after. Cause
yeah, I feel like probably not. You could definitely tell during the scenes where the masks come alive that what they've done is they've taken like actors wearing masks and then just editing out. They're probably wearing like green suits or blue suits, depending on which kind of color separation overlay or blue screen, green screen, and then remove the bodies. But because you could definitely see like it was someone like walking at some points as they're like running away from Carly as she's waving the head around. And the explanation behind the masks is more interesting. Like, there isn't really an explanation for the masks in the original book that I remember. It's just like, I make masks and they came alive. What are you gonna do? But in the book, it's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde-ish kind of thing where he says like, the mask started beautiful, and but he was wearing them and it was his own nature that was corrupting them and making them awful. And you find out that the face he has on in the show is also a mask and that there's something else underneath it. I thought that was a really cool, like, bit of horror, like, thrown in there in the middle of the show that wasn't in the original story. So the storekeeper all of a sudden becomes a really interesting character, whereas, like, you can literally just back up, like, you know, 20 minutes to when we were talking about the Haunted Mask, the book, and talking about how goofy the storekeep stuff was.
Yeah, he fixed it. Everything is fixed here. What was the other thing that they switched around that we had a problem with?
Instead of putting the head on over her own, on top of the masked head, what she does instead is she's just kind of waving it like across a bunch of vampires, and that's enough to get it off of her. So that worked a lot better than her trying to like put this paper mache head over. I think it just wouldn't have read well. I think that's definitely, I still like how it plays out in the book, but
I don't think it would have played out well as an ending in a something where you can see what's happening necessarily.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And there's another little detail I like. They got away from her kind of running through neighborhoods, and they end up having this whole thing between her and Chuck and Steve take place in a graveyard, where Chuck and Steve are like just dancing on graves, being jerks, and Carly Beth runs up, and that's where she does her scare of them. But she ends up like burying the head in the earth, like it's, you know, like in the graveyard, not just cast into a bush that she has to come find later. Cause that was always, that part of the book was real weird. Cause you got to, it was like a whole cliffhanger about her, like not seeing the head. And then you turn the next page, it's like, oh yeah, it was just like over here in the bush.
Yeah. But now she's like, when she's looking for it, she's frantically digging it up out of the, and her original plan is also, which is a little weak, but at least it makes sense about why she's going for it, is she's just like, this is who you want. Like, come, this is Carly Beth. Go after the head, not me.
Right.
To the other masks as a way to try and get them to go after the, which is a little weird. I don't know if I've gone for a bait head.
Necessarily, right. But. She did. Symbol of love. That was part of it. There's a couple things missing. So I think overall, I think the show fixed my biggest problems with the book, maybe improved it overall. I think I wish I had seen her go into the house, because you remember there's the one part in the book where she's
like,
bring her in, show this old lady who loves the little kids, show her your mask, and she screams. That didn't happen, but she still gets at the mother with the two kids. She still terrifies that family, which was still great on screen.
That scene was so good. Just thinking about, because that's the older couple that gives her the apple too. And she's just like so ripshit angry. What I love about it is it's kind of like those scenes in like, that you see in horror movies or whatever sometime, where like the monster is confronted by like a little old lady or whatever. And she's like, I can't believe I have to fucking get stopped by this bullshit. Like, and just, we're going to have to sit through this. And like Carly just, I think she just eventually just screams and runs out of the house and just whips the apple at the door. And then Sabrina comes out. She's like, where's your deal? And she takes Sabrina's apple and whips it at the door and then runs off cackling into the night.
I can't remember. Was there a part where she scares two boys that she thinks are Chuck and Steve? Cause that was.
Yeah, that does happen in the show too. Yeah. Yeah. That happens in the book. They're also with their mom. And that's like the mom that's just like, what's your name? What are you doing?
Right.
And the mom at the house is a shorter episode where she just darts off and Sabrina's like, what are you doing? Like, can you stop?
A bit more of a confrontation in the book than in the show. Also, the part of the book that you and I both, like, it raised our eyebrows and we texted each other like, wow, was when Carly Beth starts strangling Sabrina. Not as epic in the show, because Sabrina's like talking through her strangulation the whole time. She's like, Carly, stop strangling me. This is what's wrong with you, Carly.
Because I think Carly has her by her costume and is shaking her. She's not actually like throttling her.
Right.
But yeah, so they kind of dialed that down. But I thought the pacing was all really done well. Like it didn't feel like anything was missing. Like I think switching up the getting rid of the science fair
that was scare. Good idea.
And doing the pumpkin thing was like, oh, they set the time, they've done everything. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it was really good.
I just really liked it. I'm just gonna get rid of that bitch. You're gonna like it so much.
It was really good. One part that you and I had to stop and rewind was early on, you know, we
that fucking sandwich. What the fuck?
Because you know
it was like pumpernickel and something.
Two different breads. There's a dark brown bread and a white bread.
And we're hoping it's pumpernickel because there's like almost no texture on it. It looks like
a chocolate some bar. Sort of
it was upsetting.
Yeah.
But there's definitely something in between the two slices. It wasn't just like a chocolate bar on a slice of bread, which is
potentially
fine.
A cheese. You know, but also too, and I noticed when we rewound it back that it had to be the second take because she unwraps a sandwich that already has a bite taken out of it.
And there's a split second where she's got a look on her face. She's just like, a fucking pumpernickel, seriously? Like, just.
It was so good. But some movie trivia.
And why not?
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just thinking, like, why would they have her turn it to the side to the camera that she's already bitten out of
The way she unwrapped it, she already could have just taken a bite out of the solid. I know. But she almost looked excited about the fact, like, oh, there's a bite taken out of it. Like, that's, like, it wasn't excited over what kind of sandwich it was. She was just excited that someone else had also enjoyed her sandwich ahead of time.
This was some random kid. This kid did not feature in the show at all.
Oh.
It was so good. But as
so many great acting choices.
For some trivia to tie into this, because later in that same scene, that's where Carly Beth takes a bite of her sandwich. She's been punked by Steve and Chuck because they put a worm in it. If you remember in the book, it was a bit of a like, is there a worm? Is there not a worm? Oh, it's a worm! Here, apparently, and this is according to R.L. Stine's autobiography, they were going to use a rubber worm in the scene where Carly Beth Caldwell bites into the sandwich and finds a half-bitten worm, but Catherine Long, actress, her pseudonym, insisted on eating a real worm to make it realistic. And then on a separate occasion, R.L. Stine suggests that the scene took 12 takes and 12 worms. I don't know how much of that I buy. I think that latter part is R.L. Stine having a bit of fun with the kayfabe of it all, but they didn't have to do that because she takes a bite of the sandwich, just spits it out, and then they like cut to a worm on a sandwich. You have never had to have a real worm there, Carly Beth or Catherine Long. You ate a worm for no reason.
I feel like I'm just going to spackle this up, I guess. I feel like she wanted a worm for the scene where they're putting a worm in it and they're just like, we'll use a fake worm there. And she's like, no, I'm okay with touching a sandwich holding a worm in it. Like, I'm not a chicken shit. And then they use 12 different worms because of like maybe animal rights activists are like, you can't use the same worm because it's, you know, it's under set lights and everything. So it's 12. It just gets swapped out from between the slices of bread. She never bites into it. Like, of course not. Why would she do that?
Maybe.
You don't even see her really biting into anything.
She bites into something and spits it out.
No, you see her bite into the bread, but you don't see like the live worm
right,
on the other
that's
side
what I'm
of
saying.
The rubber.
Yeah, you wouldn't have had to use a live worm at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she was just like cool with them using a live worm in front of her or whatever. Because, you know, there's that whole thing like, oh, little girls might freak out, so we can't.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe that's the case.
But then R.L. Stine was just like, she fucking ate 12 worms right in front of me. I was just like, hot damn. Jesus, I know what my next book's going to be about. A kid that loves worms.
I wonder if that could have been the inspiration. We'll have to find
out. With the time frame.
Maybe.
No, that would have been too quick, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Huh? The show comes out in 1995.
Yeah. I don't know. Well,
what if Catherine Long is just like, Jesus Christ, that kid really likes worms. Bingo. Book number 21. Or 31.
21.
It's literally the next one we're
21.
Yeah, 21. Yeah, yeah. 21.
R.L. Stine makes a couple of cameos. He makes a brief cameo in the background when the children are trick-or-treating. You and I missed that one. We weren't paying attention, but apparently he's there. And also in the mask shop, while Carly Beth is looking for a mask, R.L. Stine has a mask of his own face in that shop as well.
Oh, is it the one that Carly Beth is wearing?
But I got his ass.
Fuck you, R.L. Stine. I'm sorry.
Jesus, he's our friend.
I get aggressive. I'm sorry. Yeah, he does her ad spots. I'm sorry.
In our last bit of trivia here, in the initial filming of the final scene with the twist ending, which I'm guessing is with Noah putting on the mask. The broadcasters deemed the scene too scary, which led Fox asking for the scene to be reshot to make it milder. The original cut of the scene has yet to be released to the public. What happened with this scene? Well, how could it have been so terrifying? Did Noah come out and was actually evil? I can't think of how it could have been beyond the pale.
He's got like the neighbor's cat and a scissors in the other hand. He's just like, Carly Beth, I'll make you a cat costume. Like, And that's where we cut.
That's it. Other than like animal abuse or him running out with like a loaded gun, I cannot think of how that could have been worse. I can't imagine what they could have done. But at
Jesus Christ, just him coming out with a shotgun, just like, oh, it's hunting season, get into your duck costume, Carly Beth.
Oh my gosh. I mean, just incredible stuff, man. Yeah, that pretty much does. Do you have any lasting thoughts on that? I think we pretty much covered everything.
I will say I did enjoy that two-parter a lot more than the House of Dead Hill.
Nope. The Welcome to
Welcome
Dead
to
House.
Dead Mansion Shit. Yeah, I did like the haunted mask.
Yes.
Yes. I did like the haunted mask a lot more. I really enjoyed it. I think maybe because I was a little stoned,
sure.
or drunk and still, but like, I actually had a good time watching that episode, and it followed the book and it did good. It did real good. And it fixed the problems that we had with it. That's what made me happy. The storekeep is an actual character in the book now, or in the story now. And that makes me happy. Whereas before he's just like a schmuck who's just like, I have monsters for sale, maybe. I mean, they're not for sale. Shit, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Oh, $30. Oh, here you go.
Yeah, he was just weird. He needed more of an explanation. We got it. So, yeah, I think the show fixed everything wrong with the book, and probably for time it had to eliminate a few other parts that we liked. But for the most part, I think it was an A-plus effort. I'm a huge fan. I wanted to read this email that we got. Well, he signs off the email as Jack Bro. So, Jack Bro, thanks for emailing the show. I wanted to skip through this really quickly. He says, hello, Trav and Dylan. I have been a big fan of the podcast and have been enjoying them since episode one. They are a great nostalgic trip to my youth with the inclusion of your humor. Oh, thanks. Probably talking about Dylan. And I have come to enjoy from the Polymedia Network as a whole. Look at that. Found the whole network. Please, folks, check out the whole network. There's a lot of good stuff here. But Jack says,
Split Up is coming out with an I don't know when this is
coming out. Well, hey, soon.
You should listen to Split Up.
Split Up.
I'm on that one.
Yeah, because Dylan, if you liked our breakdown of the TV show, Dylan and our pal Jeff, who's his co-host there, they break down all kinds of scary movies. So you got a taste of that here. All right. He says, Jack says, recently my 7-year-old son came back from a book fair, and to my delight, he picked up a new Goosebumps series titled Goosebumps House of Shivers, Scariest Book Ever. This excitement brought back memories of the local clubs that I was a part of regarding my fandom of the series when I was a kid. My school had an after school club where we would discuss a book and do an activity that would align. We ate dirt pudding after reading Go Eat Worms, for example. Also, my local Barnes & Noble had a club to enjoy the spooky series that my brother and I would attend. But the best club was the official Goosebumps fan club that you could join through Scholastic. I believe there was a form to fill out in the books and a small fee to join for the year. You would receive a monthly newsletter and also received other gifts like a water bottle, stickers, and a backpack, all that were delivered in a cardboard coffin. Sadly, I do not have all the items, but I do still have some newsletters and the backpack, which are attached. And you took pictures. We got a picture of the backpack. It looks like it's of quality from a 1995 write in and receive a backpack. It looks like the zipper maybe lasts 3 or 4 or quick unzips. And then we got the newsletter. Jack included a whole lot of cool stuff here. And he says, so that long buildup leads me to my question. Did either of you have and participate in any clubs like this for Goosebumps or a similar fandom? If so, how was it? Thanks for the entertaining podcast, and I hope you two keep it going. I'm looking forward to wrap up season 2. Just finished Why I'm Afraid of Bees. Sorry, Jack. That one was kind of a dud. Hopefully the episode was good. And he's hopeful for season 3, which has some great issues, which hopefully there are some. So, Jack, thanks so much for the email. Dylan, were you ever part of a fandom or a newsletter for, Goosebumps or otherwise? Anything like that?
So, I was actually trying to find it just now, because I've been trying to Google it. I wasn't part of a Goosebumps one, but I was part of a scary thing for kids magazine that would come once a month. I think I had it for a year in elementary school. But the magazine had stories from the scary stories to sell and tell in the dark.
Yeah.
It would have a snippet from there, usually. Which were always great. I think Bruce Coville, I don't know if you know who Bruce Coville is. He wrote a bunch of books in the 90s that were science fiction for kids, basically.
Okay.
Hold on, let me...
Like My Teacher is an Alien?
Yeah. That's
it. Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that he's most known for. I think he had a series in there where he picked famous classic science fiction and horror works that were published in there. So stuff that were from the 50s or 60s that might still be interesting to kids. And there's an ongoing magazine about these this family or a story in the magazine that would continue part one and part two and part three in each in magazine about this family that gets abducted by aliens, I think. And they're in a space zoo that looks like their neighborhood, but it's actually like filled with, it's actually been set up by aliens, I think. It's been a while since I've read it.
Right. But yeah.
If anyone else knows what the fuck that is, that'd be great if someone could tell me. But I did enjoy reading that as a child because I've always liked scary stuff.
Yeah, right on, man. I just,
what about you, Travis?
Well, I definitely wasn't a part of anything, that required money, unfortunately, but, I did, and this is just tangential. This is not really answering Jack's question, but you reminded me when you said, the thing about the, stories to tell in the dark, or scary stories to tell in the dark. There's a documentary about that, on some streaming service, but R.L. Stine is actually a talking head in that. They talk to him. Oh. And you know those books. They were really known for their art, really. He's just that.
Stephen Gammell.
You're right. Yeah. And great little documentary. It's about 90 minutes long. It talks about, I wish it had a little bit more about the stories themselves, but it's really about, you know, sort of their impact.
Well, what's interesting about them is, because I get the feel, and I don't know this for a fact, it's just, as an adult, I actually rebought those books. They came out with like a hardcover that was all three of the books or whatever. And he's a folklorist. Mm-hmm. Like, this is actually a collection of folklore, and urban legends and stuff that he's collected. If you go to the footnotes at the back of the book, it explains a lot of where, like, he found these stories, where they came from. Not maybe as much depth as you like, but it's interesting as an adult reading them and being like, oh, that's why the writing isn't very great, because he's not telling you, he's not necessarily telling you a story the way someone's telling you a story. He's a folklorist and he's presenting like, this is a story that people used to tell. And he even gives instructions on like how to tell some of them. He's like, traditionally when people tell a story, like they do like a boom, boom sound like at this point, and they get louder and faster.
Right.
And, like, so there's all these cool little notes that like I missed as a kid. And then I read as an adult and he's just like, oh, this is way more interesting than I thought originally.
It's almost like an instruction guide for how to read it to children. And it is like scary stories to tell in the dark to children, which is great. I love it. The documentary is interesting too, because there were parents that were in upheaval about these books being in public libraries or in school libraries. They thought they were too scary. They thought the art was too scary. And they go through that and they talk about, they even bring the people on that were against the books and kind of get their modern take on how, you know, all that stuff. So, good. I've got to recommend that documentary. Also, I would have loved to have had more Goosebumps swag. Here's the two Goosebumps things I got. When I was a kid, I somehow convinced my mom to order me, a little 4-book set that started with, I think it was around the, like, Cuckoo Clock of Doom and, Terror Tower, My Hairy Adventure, something like that. Like, it had that, those four from a block there. But also, not long ago, maybe a year and a half ago, once we started this podcast, a friend of ours, friend of the network, his name's, it goes by Deej in the Discord, sent me a Goosebumps sleeping bag that he found. I don't know if it was.
Oh, that's right. I saw.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like.
I remember the pictures of that.
A yard sale find or something. I still have that. I still bundle up with it. It's nice and soft. It's got Goosebumps on it. So that's some cool Goosebumps swag that I have. I don't have anything as cool as like a backpack from the day, but.
I used to have, I had some of the Goosebumps Pogs.
Oh, that's cool.
Including the Slammer, which was, Skelly, or whatever the fuck his name is. Before, like, Slappy really became, like, the mascot for Goosebumps, they tried to push
the skeleton, yeah.
And he was the Slammer. For, if you kids remember, back in the day we had Pogs, I don't even know what the fuck they were, but then you would slam down a really hard plastic thing on the other ones and they flip over and then you could take them from your friend, but you never did that because you didn't want to give up your Pogs. I never did. Yeah. I never used them the way you're supposed to use them.
Just collect
them. Also, the name of that documentary is Scary Stories.
Scary Stories. Yeah. Yeah.
And it looks like it's available on maybe a couple.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I'd say check it out. If you're into this, if you listen to this, that's right up your alley. You get a little bit of R.L. Stine in there too. But yeah, I think that's going to wrap us up. Jack, thanks for the email. If anybody would like to email us, please do. WeGotGoosebumpsPodcast@gmail.com. If you start typing the email address and you realize, God, I'm tired. You're typing it right. Keep going until you're done.
I feel like this is like an attack against me every single episode. And I don't understand why. Like, it's a perfectly serviceable, you know, like, I you don't have to spell anything. You don't have to be like, oh, so it's W-E-G-O-T. T as in Thomas. G as in Goosebumps. O as in the second letter in Goosebumps. Like, you don't even have to, you can just say, we got Goosebumps podcast at gmail.com. And it's not even like you didn't approve it before. It's like, hey, by the way, this is the best I can do. You're like, who gives a fuck? Just put it up there. I'll just rag you on you about it for the next, I don't know, fucking 300 episodes.
I think you and I both were a little disappointed that we got Goosebumps was already taken. We had to add podcast to it. So if you're out there, we got Goosebumps, we'd like our email address. Please.
I'm pretty sure they're also like a relationship podcast too. Like they, like we got Goosebumps because we're so much in love. And she's like, go fuck yourselves. We got a book series to talk about where a child tries to force feed a hamster some goo.
Yes. Way more important things. So please, if you want to be like Jack, you want to be cool like Jack, reach out to us, share us, share with us your favorite books, any memories, stuff like that, questions. That'd be great. We'll read them out here on the show. We've proven that we'll do it. We've done it before. And then you could also reach out to us on Twitter at Say Cheese and Pod. We're active on there intermittently, but especially when seasons are active, you'll see posts for the show, and we try to interact as much as possible. So please do that.
Desperate pleas for retweets and also comment to us there, too. We'll definitely retweet anything that we find interesting in the Goosebumps community. Very interesting community. I've become
it is interesting
familiar with some of their quirks, and
they got them. They got quirks.
They're y'all's quirky, and I guess we're part of them now.
Yeah, we're part of the quirk. We're quirky yeah. too. Yeah.
And if you wanna throw some quirks towards our kinks, quirky queen. What am I saying?
What are you saying?
You can also support this show and other shows on the Polymedia Network at patreon.com/polykill. And you know what? That's a nice thing to do. There's a lot of other great shows on the network, like Split Up.
Split Up's great. Split Up, Tales of the Lesser Media might also fill this ilk for folks that are into video games and books, perhaps. Jesus Christ.
Okay, listen. No, no.
I'm just trying to give suggestions that link together.
Just give an up, but like an up. We're going to be up this episode, remember?
Right. Cool. Yeah, so thanks everyone for listening, and there'll be a couple more bonus episodes before season 3. I can't wait to get into the worms, Dylan!
You know, that's actually a really terrible movie. I believe it's called Squirm, which is about people being devoured alive by earthworms.
I can't wait. Until then.
I mean, we're not watching it. There's no reason to watch it. It's bad.